on two prominent discourses, prominent public discourses in Greece, and I'm hoping to suggest that their interpretation of emotional politics has been importantly connected to conceptualizations of the desirable end goal of relations between the state and society. And this paper draws on work I carried out on the one hand, the clash of Western and traditional values in Greece, and on the other hand, public attitudes in Greece towards crime, political violence, and punishment. And I was really happy to be stimulated to do this, to write this paper, because of the suggestion of the panel topic on emotions and politics, which helped me bring together some themes that I'd been looking at sort of tangentially on the evident hopes and fears that surround the identification of emotional politics in Greece. So to start then with this issue of emotions in politics in the case of Greece. Whether in Greece or in other societal contexts, I'd argue that the value attributed to emotionalism, and by emotionalism I'm referring to the use of the term to denote an individual who's in touch with their emotions and often makes known their sentiments openly and rather dramatically to others. Well, the value attributed to emotionalism, whether in Greece or elsewhere, has tended to be greater at the personal level than at the societal or political level, where the characteristic is often associated with irrational policy-making, demagoguery, as we've just been hearing about populism, and retrogressive or recalcitrant political currents. In the UK, for example, a recent radio debate involving Lord Heseltine, a Conservative Party grandee, discussing the British government's views, policy of the new regional growth fund, had the critical comments of a trade unionist contribution somewhat mocked as old-fashioned rhetoric straight from the 1970s. This put-down was particularly interesting given that, as has been suggested by media commentators, Heseltine has himself been brought out of retirement by the Conservative Party precisely for his own brand of what has been called his classy pugilism, so needed in these times of strain for moderate politicians. And one can see his role as akin to that of John Prescott for New Labour, and in Greece perhaps by Pangalos for PASOK, at least pugilism, if not necessarily classy pugilism in this case. Turning to the case of Greece then, both Greek and foreign interpreters of modern Greek culture have often identified the trope of emotionalism as central to the psyche of Zorba-esque Greeks. From a negative perspective, this Orientalist identification of Greek emotionalism has thus been as much attached to the nation as to those within Greece regarded as traditionalists by modernizers. But has there been a decline of emotions? According to a wealth of academic assessments, which the previous speaker also just mentioned, from the 1990s onwards, Greek political culture has been described as becoming increasingly moderate, and public opinion has been argued to have turned away from extremist politics and political rhetoric for good. Those that have remained on what is considered to be extremist fringes have been portrayed as anachronisms, naive, particularly when they're students, or even as pathological individuals. The effective sedation of public attitudes has been identified in patterns of both electoral and contentious politics, such as declining numbers of labour strikes and demonstrations and other extra-parliamentary forms of dissenting socio-political mobilisation. So strike activity, the best recorded form of extra-parliamentary political mobilisation in Greece, saw a clear decline over the 1990s, following a relatively high level of activity in the early 1990s in comparison with other EU member states. And this led to the assessment that in tandem with improved economic indicators, high unemployment notwithstanding, a broader transformation of behavioural trends had taken place in Greece. As George Pagoulatos has noted in his book on the trajectory of Greece's economy over recent decades, despite the entrenchment of unemployment at persistently high levels and the gradual advancement of unpopular structural reforms, such as privatization and a part liberalization of the labor market, resistance proved for many to be far less than would have been expected by any observer of Greece's hyper-politicized, polarized, and contentious socio-political affairs of the 1970s and 1980s. Certainly, and coming back here to a point that's been raised both today and in the previous panel on emotions and politics, in the aftermath of a forging of a neoliberal consensus amongst the elites of the two dominant political parties of the centre-right and centre-left, New Democracy and PASOK, the parliamentary far-left did not see its small proportion of the growth with the vote substantially increase, even if the far-right saw their smaller levels of support growing. And I'm not going to elaborate about why the different hypotheses for which this has been the case. At the same time, public opinion surveys have recorded, as has also been noted today, increasing cynicism towards politics, fueled in part by revelations of major political scandals, and they've also recorded declining interest in politics, especially amongst the youth. At least this is how it's been perceived. Not even the unrest of December 2008, the worst public disorder Greece had seen since the Civil War, nor the occurrences of unrest that we heard of in May 2010 or since, have been of a sufficient scale to alter such perspectives of a decline of the relevance of emotions to Greek politics, according to some commentators such as Stathis Kalibas and Kathimoni would be another newspaper which sort of purports this view. For many commentators, the socioeconomic transformations of the past 35 years have made emotional politics passé, with little or no prospect of their return to the serious business of politics in Greece. So has this been the case? Ironically, recent years have seen the rise of an alternative discourse that has lauded the renewal and reinvention of emotional politics in Greece. On the one hand, judgments about a more mature and less combative political culture have appeared rather premature, following renewal of traditional emotional politics, witnessed accompanying the upsurge in strike activity in the noughties. The general strike of April 2001, for example, was widely reported as the largest general strike in Greece since 1974, and possibly since the end of the Second World War, and was one of many that began in the late 1990s and have continued since. To pick up on a point that was suggested, I think, in the first paper today, Eurobarometer surveys have also indicated that Greeks remain committed to political conceptualizations of responsibility rather than neoliberal individualist conceptualizations of responsibility, which writers such as Brian Barry have suggested are critical imperative for the effective construction of social mobilization. So these conditions remain. On the other hand, many interpretations of the unrest of December 2008 displayed considerable enthusiasm for what they saw as the reinvention of emotional politics. This reinvention was differently located. Some were enthusiastic about the emotionalism of the event, and notwithstanding its organizational and ideological weaknesses, because of its fractiousness, the simplicity of its message, as they viewed it, and its implications for the continuity of mass political engagement received their support. So, for example, Kostas Douzinas characterized the emotions of the unrest as an expression of political agency at its degree zero, the message being, here we are, we stand against. And this message itself was an encouraging sign, if you like, and an expression which tentatively offered the promise of a new generation of politicized citizens, and even, he suggested, the rearrangement of the rules of political participation. More definitively still, Andreas Kalivas has pointed to the expressive involvement of immigrants in the unrest as one of the few positive constituent elements representing an effort to reconstitute and expand categories of citizenship, membership, and community. if with some signs of trepidation, then the rediscovery of emotional politics in Greece has provided the backbone for a very different discourse concerning Greece's contemporary socio-political trajectories, in which high emotions have been identified as an essential feature of contemporary activism. Indeed, such interpretations underscore the relationship between the emotional potency of contemporary activism in Greece and the contribution and potential contribution of such activism to the evolution of the Greek political environment. So my argument now is that one has to assess these assessments. It is imperative to consider the standpoints of those who offer assessments of emotions in Greek politics, and in particular, to recognize the closeness of the relationship between views of the appropriate degree of emotionalism in politics and the desirable trajectory of political development. A brief caveat here. In their introduction to the 1996 edited collection Comparative Perspectives on Social Movements, Doug McAdam, John McCarthy and Meta Zeld remind the reader that at the outset of the 1960s, a good many social scientists in the US, including notably the sociologist Daniel Bell, believed that we in the West had reached a stage of societal development in which ideological conflict would gradually be replaced by a more pluralistic, pragmatic consensus. As McAdam and his co-authors point out, the outbreak of black student sit-in demonstrations throughout the American South, which were a significant harbinger of things to come, illustrated the error of such optimism. Reading mainstream Greek social science since the 1990s can leave a similar sense of unwarranted optimism. I would suggest, however, that to characterize such optimism as misguided or misjudged would be to miss its political value rather than simply its academic value. I don't mean to suggest here that these discourses have constituted a particular aberration from the principle of objectivity to which social science aspires. What I'm suggesting instead is that whilst values and research are always intimately intertwined, the political imperatives of these prominent bodies of work have reflected an important synergy of opinion and commitment between Greek intellectual and political elites, and that this work has functioned to support tightly framed hopes and expectations for the future shape of Greek social and political life. For both those who regard emotionalism as harmful to the positive development of Greek political life, labeling it either as anachronistic, marginal, or immature, and for those who regard the perceived resurgence of emotionalism as a window of opportunity for the positive development of Greek political life, public analysis and commentaries are political acts, sometimes but not always explicitly so, and I'd refer here to Stathis Kalivas's talk he gave at Woodrow Wilson Center in 2009, pointing to the need to stigmatize riotous attitudes and behaviors. These are political acts, not always explicit, but often so, that are intended to support the realization of such goals. In a rather neat inversion, in diametric opposition, the hopes and fears of each discourse I've mentioned above earlier mirror each other. Both discourses, nevertheless, share hope for change and fear the prospect of stagnation. Together, they are testament to the continuing central polarity of Greek society, a polarity which continues to smoulder despite its effacement from the greater part of institutionalized politics. So aside from this continued polarity, what are the implications stemming from this point? I would argue that it's only in recognizing the extensiveness an invasiveness of proselytizing analyses that one can hope to anticipate the risks of each in either overstating or understating the likelihood of securing any of the political paths that they support. And if I have 2 minutes, I can just give you 2 examples. The first is that the fact that's commonly mentioned that there hasn't been more public unrest despite the introduction of these structural reforms, notwithstanding efforts at underreporting by the media, could possibly be illustrative of delayed reaction. If we look analogously at what happened in the 1920s and 30s, it may be that the public will react, but after a certain period of time, not initially. So there's a period of shock, and then they react later. So this would be against those who see emotions as having sort of passed their prime in Greek politics. The second is that the politicization and radicalization of a new generation may not necessarily lead to any radical or other change in Greek politics that those who look at particularly and see it enthusiastically are hoping for. Why? Because the Greek state has so successfully been able to ensure the fracture of political representation and clamp down on populism, not produce, not come forth with the policies that those populists, if you will, are hoping for. So, in other words, both discourses, investing so much in the way in which they analyze contemporary discourses, may be overlooking the limitations of both their hopes.